Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a safe place, a place where we can feel free sharing our feelings. Think of my office as a nest in a tree of trust and understanding. We can say anything.
Anything.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Deep down, I'm feeling a little confused. I mean, suddenly you get married and you're supposed to be this entirely different guy. I don't feel different.
With Andy Dirt Johnson.
I happen to look over at a certain point during the meal and see a waitress taking an order. And I found myself wondering what color her underpants might be. Her panties.
And Brendan Sprague.
Odds are they're probably basic white cotton underpants. But I started to think maybe they're silk panties. Maybe it's a thong. Maybe it's something really cool that I don't even know about, you know.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
What? What, I thought we were in the trust tree with in the nest, are we not?
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course YouTube. Good morning. I think I have the best statter story.
I have an assist on my statter story today. Mm. My dad emailed me the other day a story. Said, hey, you should use this in statter story. Sent me an email.
Your
with
dad
this.
Emails you?
He does. He sends me emails.
And can't this, stream, but he emails by communicating.
I got an email with a story. He said you should use this in statter story, and I read the story and I thought, you know what? You cooked up a pretty good one here.
How about
I'm not
that?
Gonna lie.
I love that.
So it's a, you know, we're tag teaming this thing at 8:15.
I like that Rocky's email and statter stories.
We got stories. He's finding show content here.
We have a lot to get to in the second hour. Our ticker's going to get moved to 8:30 today. It's a late ticker. Brian Baldinger can go at 8:30. You go at 8:30.
Yes.
Okay.
Whenever Baldy goes, we're ready to go.
So we'll go 8:15 statter story, followed by a Brian Baldinger daily ticker move to 8:30. I want to remind you guys to set your calendars. My wife has a shared calendar. I feel like it buzzes 80 times a day. Like,
practice, this, that.
Yeah.
Appointment.
Yeah.
Pick up school.
And then when I'm like, what are we doing today? You don't have to check the calendar.
Check the calendar. It's in the calendar. I never write anything in our calendar. That's one of my bad traits.
She's been yelling at me so much. I've been trying to get better at it, actually, to help.
Yeah.
But, like, it's also depressing to click it. It's, like, every single day, four things.
It just never stops. I did add, we're going to our first Timbers game. I put that in the family calendar yesterday.
Oh, so did I.
I let the wife know.
Hey,
Friday, June 13th.
Yeah.
I'm popping my Timbers cherry.
We got surprises yesterday.
They call me Timber Dirt now. Timbers, I'm inside you. Let's do this.
Set your calendar. Speaking of June. June 24th, which is a Tuesday.
Whoa.
Because that's our 11th annual Fan Golf Classic. Back out at Langdon Farms, brought to you by your local Toyota dealers. Also brought to you by Henderson and Daughter Windows and Doors and Philbrook Law Accident and Injury Lawyers. Matt's Barbecue will be on hand. Morning, afternoon rounds, and foursomes are available at 1080thefan.com. Click on the logo. We'll see you out at Langdon Farms Tuesday, June 24th.
Chicks dig it, man. It's going to be a great time. We're probably already halfway out. I haven't asked recently, but they go quick, man. Go buy your foursome.
Afternoon is filling up.
Yeah, it goes fast.
I kind of just never understood the afternoon one.
It's a work thing.
I'm with you
for our personal lives, but it's a work thing. You want to be able to, like, hey, I'm in the office. And then what's the tea time? 1 o'clock, right?
1 o'clock. 7
it's
and
like,
1.
Dude, you're there till noon. Hey, I'm going to cut out for a meeting. Yeah.
You're not taking a
see you later.
Vacation
you don't have to take an entire vacation. Yeah. If you play in the morning, it's a day off.
because you're not going back.
You're having fun. It's going to be a delightful afternoon.
Well, and then also you can still go back and do your husband dad thing if you are in that position.
You can go do your family stuff after the day.
We have a lot to get to here in the second hour. I'm going to start with some football stuff. We can get back into the NBA playoffs a little bit later.
Football stuff.
Haven't talked Knicks Pistons at all?
No, we have not. And we got two very entertaining games tonight. At least I hope.
Well, I'm reading through, and I'm, you know what I'm interested in, and it's a long time away, but it makes the college football season that much more interesting. The quarterback class next year is mighty tasty.
It is supposed to be mighty tasty.
You've got Nussmeier.
Yep.
You've got, people are actually super excited about Mendoza in the Indiana system.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have Drew Aller.
Yeah. John Mateer.
John Mateer at Oklahoma. How much growth is he going to have with his arm and still using his legs? He's a really good athlete. Obviously, you've got Arch Manning in Texas, and I think flying under the radar, but not really, but yes, but kind of not, but going to. Lenora Sellers,
sure,
at South Carolina has an opportunity to be a monster.
You haven't even mentioned the guy who might be the first quarterback taken, which I don't know if I agree with it, but I've seen some mocks already for him next year.
I said Arch Manning.
No, it's not Arch Manning, because Arch Manning might not come out. He still has 3 years of eligibility left. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he has
3 years?
Yeah, buddy.
They just automatically get five now?
Well, he redshirted his first year.
So
he didn't play.
One.
And so, and then last year he was a redshirt freshman. So he's only a redshirt sophomore this year. So he has redshirt sophomore, redshirt junior.
If he came back.
So I don't know if he will. Him and Dante Moore are very similar. They've each had 1 year where they redshirted and 1 year where they didn't. So they're only redshirt sophomores. They technically have 3 years of eligibility left.
Yeah.
I've seen mocks if Arch is to stay, which, by the way, we're just assuming Arch is great, which I get. He's a very highly touted prospect, but not a guarantee. Cade Klubnik is a guy who I've already seen mentioned in top five of mocks for next year.
I don't know where I'm at on Cade Klubnik.
I don't know either. He's a little undersized.
So much.
He's a good athlete. I don't think he's had very good wide receivers. I don't think their offensive system has been very good.
And they finally portaled.
Finally portaled. So maybe he has a big, you know, kind of boom year. He very well could be the first quarterback taken in the draft next year.
The one that's Cade Klubnik-esque for me is Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, Kyle Hondo-McCord goes to Syracuse, and I'm like, oh, good luck there. And
not
he had a
work.
Great year.
He had a funny, led the country in passing yards this last year.
So Mendoza going to Indiana and having a real offensive mind coach him is very interesting. I was looking at the Athletic, did a first-round mock for next season already.
Yes, I love it. I saw one, by the way, that was a year ago for this year's first round, and it was pretty funny to read through. Like, Carson Beck was the second overall pick.
James Pierce was probably third or fourth.
I think James Pierce was number one.
Yeah.
Beck was two. It was like, there were seven names maybe in the top ten that I don't even know if they got drafted.
Well, I'll reach out, because I reached out to Dane Brugler, who does fantastic work for the Athletics draft coverage. He couldn't go. He got back to me. He's like, he actually remembered being on with us. He goes, I'm so sorry, I just don't have time. I said, I'll circle back around maybe after the draft. He wrote this article, so I dove into it yesterday. And would you care to guess who his number one pick is?
Number one pick. I mean, if Arch Manning comes out, I'm assuming people are going that way.
What team do you think is number one in his mock?
Cleveland?
Nope.
No.
The Saints?
The Saints.
How about that?
Manning
that
to the Saints. Up. That'd be pretty spectacular.
Arch going to New Orleans, where his grandpa famously.
And maybe
made his
he
name.
Does surprise and have a good year and leave. I believe that both. And look, times are different. So apples to oranges, I get it. I believe both Peyton and Eli used up all of their eligibility before going to the NFL. Peyton was a big deal
different
when he came
world,
back.
Though.
I get it, but he's also from a very financially well-off family.
Oh, like, money's not a problem.
He went to a place where he knew he was going to sit for 2 years. Yeah. Like, I don't know if he's just going to say, man, I'm having fun at Texas. Let me develop for another year if he has a good year. He's a very interesting young kid.
How much of Lenora Sellers did you watch last year?
I watched a ton of Lenora Sellers, man. He's an extremely talented athlete.
Crazy good
He's
athlete.
Well-sized. He's 6'3". I want to say 220. Like, he's well built. He's got a good arm. And one of the more underrated athletes, a quarterback in the country.
His family athlete history is pretty crazy, too. His dad was an NBA player.
I didn't know that.
And his sister,
Brad Sellers?
Yeah. And his sister just got drafted in the WNBA.
That's a hell of a family right
there.
She
was a beast.
They call those good genes right there.
So he's somebody I'm really looking forward to watch South Carolina. I poo-pooed them last year. They had a much better season than I thought that they would, and partly because he was really stinking good. I'm really curious. He's number two on the mock draft for next year.
They were a borderline playoff team last year, and one of their losses was to LSU, and they got absolutely hosed in that game.
Drew Aller is number five to Cleveland.
He's got all the physical traits.
He absolutely does.
And he played well in I'll give him credit. I think we've been a little hard on him because he came in as a number one quarterback blue chip prospect kind of guy.
I thought he was really good in the Big Ten title game.
He was really good in the, other than the pick that he threw at the end of the game, which I didn't agree with that decision because I think it was on first and 10. But he, when you got a guy who's 6'5", can move the way that he can move, has the arm strength that he does, like, scouts are going to drool.
He's
going
to be
dude.
In a position to be the number one pick.
Very well could be the number one pick in the draft.
Number 10 on the mock. This is where dirt shows up. Mm. Would you care to guess who number 10 is to New England?
I still have eligibility left. Am I going 10th overall? PIL legend? Are they taking me?
Brugler says the NFL doesn't draft 5'5 guys.
Well, Dylan Gabriel got taken, so I don't know about that.
Touche.
Hey! Ding!
Well, you're on a run today.
I'm going to go Mateo. Mateo going 10th overall?
Mateo. Yeah. Mateo.
I'd be shocked if he's not a first-round pick.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have a really good season.
It's a question of how high does he go.
If you scroll down a little bit, and not very far, coming in at number 18.
Dylan Thienemann.
Kenyon Sadiq.
Kenyon Sadiq. He's not leaving. He's Denver. Staying. He's staying the entire time. Don't leave me, Kenyon.
He gone.
Don't do it, man.
The hype is already there. He's number 18
he
in the
He is baby Brock Bowers. We tried to warn you.
Yes.
I've seen Thienemann get mocked as a first-round pick.
He is not in this one.
I've seen Evan Stewart mock, which I don't agree with
he
him being a
first-round
pick. Yeah, so, no. I mean, they got a chance for two or three guys.
They can move up some of those guys, but they're not on
Mateo
this
would
mock.
Be the highest-drafted kid.
Actually, I apologize. Evan Stewart was 31st. I forgot about that.
He's very good. I don't know if I would draft him in the first round, but to each their own.
Who do you think's going to have a better year? Kind of got my gears turning.
For the quarterbacks in this class?
No, Mateo and Sadiq.
That's hard to compare because Mateo led the Big Ten in sacks last year as a true sophomore. So he had a monster season. He's almost like set the bar very high for himself that if you don't that's a hard one to leap over again.
Well, what's his weakness to you?
I don't know if he has one. I think he's developed a ton.
Rush defense for you?
He wasn't great as a freshman. He was much better as a sophomore. Yeah. He's only bigger. He's only stronger. And so he's going to be a three-down defensive lineman, unquestionably, throughout the entirety of the season.
I think Sadiq is
I think Sadiq will have
year.
A better year, though. He's going to be the number one weapon in their offense. I know that we joke about the spring game stuff. It's not just what he did and the numbers. It's just the sheer physical presence that he has. He doesn't make sense.
6'3", 245.
He's just, like, he looks like a defensive lineman, and he hurled a guy in the secondary. He jumped, like, 6 feet in the air in the spring game this weekend. And you're just, I don't get it. He flies. He's huge. He is a one-of-one athlete. And so, if he can stay healthy this upcoming season, I mean, they jokingly said they want to give him 100 touches this year. I think that's what they want to do. So he's going to have a monster season.
If Dante has a good year, do you think he's somebody that leaves?
He could, yeah. I wouldn't blame him at all if he did.
I don't blame anybody for leaving.
No, if he has a good year this year,
Crazy to have another new quarterback.
It would be pretty wild.
Austin
to have to start over
again.
Who's next in line? Akili Smith Jr. Maybe it's the Jared Curtis kid who's coming in, hopefully, and being a true freshman. I don't know who it would be. A lot of these guys are interesting. Bo Nix had the chance after one good year at Oregon, could have gone, decided to come back, played himself into a first round pick.
That really worked out well for him.
It absolutely did. Dante Moore, I think because of his physical attributes, if he does have a good year, he'll be a first round pick because of his size and his arm strength.
The crazy thing is going through this and seeing like Nussmeier is 16th and I'm just like,
I'm a big Nussmeier guy.
I think legitimately outside of Mendoza and maybe Klubnik, all these dudes could hit.
We didn't even mention Sam Levitt, who had a good year, who's back again at Arizona State.
Touché,
like, it's a
Sam
very
Levitt.
Good quarterback class this year.
I think there's a real possibility. It's similar to what not this year's draft, but last year's draft is.
Yeah.
You get that many quarterbacks.
And I think that was the thought going into this year for the draft for me, was some of these teams deciding, should we take a guy or not? I don't have an issue with the Giants taking...
Think about how many teams could be in the quarterback market next year.
I'm saying, man, like, and all of these guys, look, again, you have no clue how all of their years are going to go and if they will live up to the hype, if Arch will have a good year and then leave, if, you know, guys like Dante Moore, will Drew Aller take another step? Will Klubnik be good? Sellers was good for 1 year. Can he go do it again? I like Nussmeier, but can he stop turning the ball over? Levitt popped last year. Will it happen again? Like, there's a lot of question marks, but if it does live up to the hype, it was one of the biggest reasons why I looked at teams this year and said, man, I don't know about a first-round quarterback. Would you rather have Drew Aller or Jackson Dart? That's just, to me, I'd rather have Drew Aller.
There's like 6 to 7 teams I'm counting that could be in the quarterback market next draft.
This is the interesting thing about every draft, and I was remembering last year for the offseason Hard Knocks, the Giants were going through this for the draft, and they were going through year by year back to 2014 when they were deciding, do we take a quarterback with the Malik Nabers pick? And they went all the way back to 2014, and they were like trying to calculate how many quarterbacks hit, how many classes ended up living up to the hype. And Daboll had a great quote where he was looking at, this is again last year's class, so Williams and May and Daniels and Nix and all those guys. And he said, is this the Herbert, Tua, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts draft class? Or is this the Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold,
yeah,
you know, Baker, who
that
I know has found it, but like,
right,
what class? And you just have no idea.
Yeah.
And so that's where it makes it so challenging to see. But you got to decide if you love one of these guys.
Is this the wave of the future, or is this going to flame out? I'll tell you what I'm talking about next on The Fan. We got Brian Baldinger on today. Little heads up. We're hoping to have Mike Silver on. Mike Silver wrote a book about coaches not long ago. Back in about October, we had him on.
Really fun interview.
Shared some really good stories about behind-the-scenes stuff between Shanahan, McVay, et cetera. And he wrote a piece. You alerted me to this yesterday because I hadn't seen it yet. He wrote a really in-depth piece. He got to be in the war room of the Jags.
Talk about the timing, too. Like, I don't know if he had an indicator they were going to do something big, but of all the rooms to be in, that's a pretty good one to be in on draft night.
If you love really good storytelling, setting a scene, painting a picture, journalism, I could not recommend this piece more. It is a great, lengthy read.
First-time GM, first NFL draft.
See, I think that's what this was. Yeah. This was luck with how this all broke out, but I think he identified and says, interesting quarterback situation. They just signed him. He looks broken.
New GM, new coach, new OC, new DC.
It's a complete flip. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that didn't change was the ownership situation.
Which it probably should, but I digress.
Well, maybe. It's interesting reading this, and I know there's a little bit of like internal spin here, but by all accounts, Khan does. He's basically like every team's roster says they should win 8.5 games. Every team. But some don't. We have not been that team in a while. And I have no idea why. You guys figure that out and let me know what you need. I'll get it for you.
Yeah.
So say what you want, and I think it's all fair. He seems to have finally taken a backseat. Like, all right, I don't know what I'm doing. Here are smart people. Tony Boselli, they interview this James Gladstone dude. He's 34 years old. Now, what I hate, having done radio since I was in my 20s, is I hate the idea that somebody who is younger than most people that watch or care doesn't know what they're doing. They haven't lived. They don't have life experience.
They're too young.
I like to zag when people are zigging. And I look at this, and I don't know if this works, but it kind of reminded me of Mike McDaniel.
Ah, okay.
There's a bit of, he's doing it differently, and he's 34. He has experience. He's worked with the Rams for years. He knows what he's talking about. And it's just fascinating reading this piece to see how he is operating as the Jags general manager. He's in the midst of trade talks during the draft. He just starts throwing the ball with Liam Cohen just calmly inside the war room. And people are like, what's happening?
Are we trading for the number 2 overall pick right now?
And he's just like, yeah, you know, let's do that trade with Detroit or the Rams or whoever the hell. Like, it's just interesting. Yeah. He created this new metric for how to identify talent. I'm not saying the Jags win. I read this and I'm very curious. Is this the wave of the future? Is this dude... who is the guy that ran the Red Sox, broke the curse? Blank. He works for baseball now.
Oh, God. Why are we blanking?
Where are you? You're my baseball guy.
Where the hell's Riggins when you need him?
Riggins, God knows where
he
Riggins is.
He won it in
is.
Chicago, too.
Yeah.
Now it's in my head that I can't think about
it. I hate when this happens.
Epstein. Theo Epstein.
Theo Epstein. Like, is he the next Theo Epstein?
Yeah.
Is he change and have a different view and not panic and not bog himself down and, oh, this is a bad pick? And I'm curious. This is a really good piece by Mike Silver on the draft process with the Jags.
It was fascinating because they made easily the biggest move of the draft. And outside of the Browns ridiculously taking Shedeur Sanders in the 5th round, would have been probably the biggest talking point out of the weekend. But then Cleveland did what they did and everybody kind of forgot, oh, that's right, the Jags traded up to number 2 overall with Cleveland to go get Travis Hunter. And when you have a young general manager, look, we've made some cracks about the way that he looks, but to your larger point, we went through a lot of that when we were young in our careers. And there's been other people in the football industry that have gone through this as well. I remember when Sean McVay was hired as an assistant from Washington to the Rams. I think he was 32 years old when he got that head coaching
job.
And they're all like, what? You're hiring there's players on the team that are older than him. There's no way this works out. Oopsies. We had a little bit of that with Kenny Dillingham. Kenny Dillingham, I just saw, celebrated his birthday the other day. He just turned 35 years old. As a 34-year-old head coach in college football, he just led Arizona State to the college football playoff. So age is just a number in the young way, just as it is in the old way at times. And if you're good at your job, you're good at your job, no matter how much, quote-unquote, life experience that you've had. Even through reading the piece, I still disagree with the trade that they made, just because of my general belief or lack thereof in Travis Hunter, should I say. Mm-hmm. But to get a behind-the-scenes look into why they made the move that they did, the aggressive nature that they wanted to have, the tone-setting move that they wanted to make for their organization, it was fascinating, and he could not have dialed that up any better of all the rooms to be in. Like, if you're in the room with, there's another team that was drafted in the top 10, like New Orleans. It's a nothing burger story. Oh, look at that. Nice draft. All right. Thank you for coming. He ended up landing in a perfect spot, and it was a great piece.
Yeah, think about that. You say, like, how did Mike Silver plan this? Like, of the teams in the top 10, is there a team you'd have been wanted to be in the war room more with?
Probably the Giants would have come to mind. Will they take Shador? Will they trade out? Is Abdul Carter the guy?
The Giants
would have been interesting.
Yeah, and the only thing about that is it got so loud that it was Carter, and I still thought maybe they come back in and get Shador in the first round. It ended up being Dart. I just felt like, it's not going to be a quarterback.
I think you could have made the argument for Vegas with Pete Carroll coming back.
That's a good
chips
one.
In the room of like, hey, are you going to take a quarterback? They've been linked to one potentially for a long. Brady mentored Shador. Is that the trade you're going to, or the draft pick you're going to make?
I just, he's got such an interesting approach.
Did you see his quote, by the way, at the press conference with Travis Hunter? His speech that he made? We might have to pull that.
Which one?
The James Gladstone one when he introduced him.
Oh, I don't think I did.
He was like, is this guy on ayahuasca right now? He is all over the map.
Well, he's a little bit, he's 34, right? So he's still pretty
young in his career.
But he's got a lot of like, you remember when Sam Presti said scared money don't make money on that like highlight clip that they showed of him?
Yeah.
He carries that kind of energy. He's just like, you can't be scared making these moves.
Look,
you swing hard. He's like, I've been talking a lot since I took this job. But to actually do something and stand on business is a great feeling. Yeah. People believe action much more than words. It was good to get some action.
It's so
That's
perfect.
A 34-year-old white cat in Jacksonville.
There is a deep level of respect for somebody who gets the job and says, I'm going to do it my way. And if it doesn't work, I can still have a career in football. I'll land as an assistant GM. Like, somebody will pick me up. Your life's going to be fine. But you get one chance at this. It goes back to the famous quote from the now GM of the New York Giants, Cooper Shane, who told his dad, Dad, you get one chance at this. You got one chance. Make a move. Take a quarterback. Take Jaden Daniels. Because you're going to get fired, and then you're probably never going to be a GM again. So you might as well go down swinging, right? You might as well take some shots. And so I don't know if I agree with the move, but there's a level of appreciation of like, you know what? Let's do it, man.
Yeah, but they create. So what he did that's a little different, and I know every team kind of has different versions of this in some ways, but for Jacksonville, it was different. He created internal metrics that align with what they want in a football player, and a lot of that is personality.
Yeah.
And you heard this with Howie Roseman. When they draft guys, Jalen Carter's a good example as he fell, right? Basically, does this guy love football? If I take football away from him,
how does he respond?
Yeah. And they found that Jalen Carter loves football. Tied to some awful stuff? Absolutely. But
he didn't go to prison. He's not in legal trouble.
Yeah. So they go, okay, he's going to follow us and he loves football and he's a monster.
Yeah.
We're in. Travis Hunter, traded for him. I think it's a bad trade. It's a lot to give up. They haven't had a non-quarterback trade in the top two since 1997.
Who was 97? Is that Ricky Williams?
I forgot who it was. It's in the story, though. That's a first trade into the top two in the NFL draft for a non-quarterback since 1997.
Ricky Williams is the only one that stands out in my mind, but he wasn't 97, was he? I think he was a little bit after that, maybe 99.
That's around when, I think Ricky was 98.
Was he 98? Yeah. And maybe he was like fifth overall? I can't remember, but that's a wild stat.
But it's a long, or maybe it's 02.
It's been a long time, and the story is very long.
Whatever it is, you haven't seen that move, and he basically is like, Travis Hunter likes to fish, he likes to take care of his family, and he loves football.
Yeah.
And that's all he likes.
He loves it so much he wants to play both sides of the ball and run his body into the ground.
And for them, that they ranked it 1 through 10, that registered a 10 of 10 on the JAG scale. They go through defensive linemen. They go through the running back that the Broncos took, Harvey, out of UCF. There's an offensive lineman. And throughout the story, Mike Silver's like, and this dude registered an 8 on the JAG scale. And like, they've completely changed how they identify who they want. Tony Baselli is very involved. He's the president of the football operations. Famously, at a water cooler, wanted a prospect. And the GM likes to tell him when he doesn't get what he wants. So he's like, go tell Baselli that offensive lineman's gone. And Baselli's at the water cooler, like, damn it.
Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. Can't have
it. It's a really good read. And I don't know if it's going to work, because if Lawrence isn't good, almost none of this matters.
You also don't know if Liam Cohen's going to be a good head coach or not. He's also an unproven head coach on top of it,
too. That's the other thing.
It's all new. It's a new head coach, new GM, new everything in Jacksonville. But they're taking a shot, man. They're taking a shot.
It's a completely different look for them. This is a new idea and change completely internally for what they have been doing.
Love of football is massive, and I think you deal with this in every professional sport. These kids are now making money in college, yes, but for the elite ones at the next level, you're going to make life-changing money, and you have to care through that. Like, there still has to be the driving factor. We talk about this a lot in the NBA when guys get supermax deals of, like, are you going to then say, okay, I've made it and I'm done, and that's kind of it for me? We see this in baseball. Guys, Anthony Rendon signs his contract. I know injuries is a big part of it, but it's like, I'm set. I don't need to work hard anymore. I'm financially secure for the rest of my life. And your career just falls out the face of a cliff. Love of the sport has to be the number one most important thing. And that is the one thing that you cannot... I don't know how Travis Hunter's going to be in the NFL, but I don't question his love of football.
Yeah, I can't find... It's in the story somewhere. I really want to get that stat
We'll dig
right.
up the deets. I'll send the audio to Swag to pull for at some point later in the show. But his answer on Travis Hunter at their press conference was pretty funny. Like, this guy may or may not be on drugs right now, but I'm kind of picking up what he's putting down.
God, it was a great stat. I was like, oh, I'll memorize that. And then I got to the air, I said it, and I'm like, maybe it's 0-2.
Maybe I screwed that one up. Did I screw that one up?
But then also I got tagged in a BetMGM thing, and so I had people in the comments that were like, Julio Jones at 0-2. Yeah, there it is. It is. It's okay. 97. This is the first trade into the top two for a non-quarterback since 97.
Who was the player? Does it say who the player was in 97? Sorry, not to put you more on the spot after you just found the stat. Who was the guy in 97? We can go look at the 1997 NFL draft.
Swag's going to have an aneurysm.
That's all right. We don't have a guest coming up.
Daryl Russell? DT out of USC.
Now, where was Ricky Williams drafted? Because they famously traded everything for him
in
New Orleans.
I really believe that Williams was 98.
Okay.
I could be wrong on that. Okay. Yeah, Russell was the second overall pick.
Okay.
So, or that was the Orlando Pace draft.
So, yeah, Ricky Williams was 99. He was the fifth pick in the draft.
99, there you go.
99 draft, fifth pick, so not top three pick.
We have a lot more to get into. Brian Baldinger will join us an hour from now. We got a Statter Story at 8:15. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in, 7:37. It's fun looking back. So we're talking the 97 NFL draft, because you mentioned that was the first trade for a top two pick.
Yeah, and I clarify.
Since 97.
It's Orlando Pace. Thank you to listeners. We appreciate when you call us idiots for not remembering 1997's NFL trade draft.
How dare you not remember the 1997 NFL draft?
So it was, obviously, the Rams got him. They traded with the Jets.
With the Jets, yes. Darrell Russell was also traded for with the two pick from the Saints to the Raiders. How about this for Seattle, too? They got Sean Springs as the third overall pick.
Yeah.
And Walter Jones is the sixth overall pick in the 1997 NFL draft. Peter Bulwer is a fun name to remember. Went to Baltimore fourth overall. Warrick Dunn went to Tampa 12th. Tony Gonzalez, 13th pick in that draft.
Tommy Knight, James Ferrier, Ike Hilliard, Michael Booker, guys that were drafted before Tony Gonzalez in the 97 draft.
Oopsies. Want a little bit of a take back on that one. It is interesting that it's been that long. We've seen a lot of those trades for quarterbacks, just not a lot of them for non-quarterbacks. Ricky Williams, as I mentioned, fifth overall pick. I remember that one vividly.
Well, that was the Saints. I mean, that was
the Saints traded everything. Ditka had the...
It was the wedding dress cover.
Yes.
With Ditka.
They were married together. Yeah. This is it. He was mortgaging everything to go get Ricky Williams with the fifth overall pick in the draft.
Yep.
Winning the Heisman Trophy. You ended up having a great career, but fun walk down memory lane. I sent the audio. We'll see if we can get it into Swag, the James Gladstone stuff on him talking about Travis Hunter, and it just, he's an interesting cat, man.
Speaking of which, by the way, I don't know if this is a response to something else. You know Dion tweeted about 40 minutes ago?
No. What did he say? What's Dion talking about?
I can do better. I know better. I was taught better. I've seen better, and I'm definitely better. So I don't know if that's just a Bible thing or if this is a reference to Shador.
It's good.
We're all going to be waiting for Deion Sanders' press conference, right?
I mean, we will. The first time he talks to the media, I know he's got a random talk show. His kid falling to the fifth round. We'll talk to Baldinger about this coming up in an hour. Because Baldy's one of our favorites, and I'm just curious his perspective on it.
Well, he was in Cleveland this morning, and I saw a snippet from his Cleveland interview, and he's like, what are the Browns doing?
That makes sense. That makes sense. Took great draft.
5-5 quarterback in the third round.
Great draft, and then you just steered it in the side of a mountain, and the entire thing crashed, and I don't understand why they did it. One of the biggest, you know, flaws in Shador falling in the draft that continues to get talked about, and I didn't realize this going in, maybe I should have, is that I didn't realize he didn't have an agent.
Yeah, I think Shiloh also just, I don't say fire, but
he decided
just,
to hire an actual agent.
To go get his own agent, yeah.
I mean, it's one thing when you get to your NFL career, we've seen a lot of guys try and represent themselves in contract negotiations, but come draft time, man, like when you're sinking like a stone, that's where it really helps to have somebody who knows what the hell they're doing on the phones, calling teams, trying to find out information. Instead, they were just kind of in the lurch. Deion, you might be able to represent him in contract negotiations, but not to that level. And it just, that was another glaring thing that I think stood out in the aftermath of the weekend was the fact that he didn't have an agent. He didn't have somebody advocating for him at that level with NFL teams.
I think the initial takeaway in the moment versus giving it time to breathe, my takeaway on that whole thing, because again, I know it's not the sexiest topic for everybody, and we've talked a lot about it. I think my overall conclusion is that for a dude who doesn't have great physical measurables, arm, size, speed, you can't go into the interview as if you are Andrew Luck. Like, established NFL Andrew Luck.
You're a lock to be the number
one pick.
I'm the
best. I'm the greatest. I don't need to pay attention. I don't need to give you my full, you know, thoughts on everything. I think it's pretty clear. The NFL was like, yo, every time we interviewed him, it was terrible.
Yeah.
So if you don't have those measurables, plus your dad's going to chime in when things don't go well and it's not going to be his son's fault. Yeah. I think the NFL was like, okay, no thanks.
Yeah.
And there was only like six teams or four teams that needed a quarterback, really.
Pretty limited to begin with.
So yeah. It was already limited. I did love the fun draft story of Will Howard begging Pittsburgh to take him.
He's like, please, man, please take me. He just screams Steeler quarterback, doesn't he? I don't know how he's going to be at the next level.
I mean, at this point, you might as well start him if you're not going to get anybody else.
I'd rather have him start than whatever the hell else they got on the roster. Unless they sign Aaron Rodgers for a year, I would gladly take Will Howard over the scrap heap of garbage that's on the rest of that roster. But yeah, interesting stuff. We'll play the James Gladstone audio coming up next. His thoughts on drafting Travis Hunter. It was pretty funny in the press conference. And then I want to ask the question. We'll get the status story, by the way, in the final hour. And, of course, Brian Baldinger will join us at 8:30. Where is the pucker factor bigger right now? We'll dive into that next on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure? Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com. We're talking about Jacksonville a little bit earlier in the trade that they made to move up to number two, and Mike Silver, who's going to be hopefully on the show tomorrow.
No.
Not on the show tomorrow, okay. He bogged on us?
Well, he didn't want to. He texted me last night. I didn't see it till I got home. He basically was like, hey, might have to push this to Friday, dealing with some logistical S.
No, that's okay. We'll get him on
at
some
point. No problem.
He's been a good friend of the program, so we'll get him on at some point. He wrote a great piece about Jacksonville and their war room and them trading up for number two overall. And it reminded me of this. We didn't play this. This happened on Friday after we were off the air because the press conferences are always weird and delayed and all that. The general manager of the Jags is 34 years old, James Gladstone. If you haven't seen a picture of him, he looks like he's 16. Well, one of our listeners put it at the fan text line, said he looks like he shaved twice in his life. And he died, like, you're not kidding. He looks incredibly young.
Yep.
And the question to ask yourself while listening to this was, did James Gladstone take ayahuasca before he started talking to the media?
Yeah, you know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar, and really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter He embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player. But he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement. A statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him. From the football field to the city to the game of football itself, Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up. Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
Look, interesting cat. He is different on how he operates. He also told Mike Silver, quote, the aura of a first-round pick in terms of trading the future one, because that's the big one, right? Next year's
first-round pick.
He said the aura of a first-round pick. It sounds amazing when it's just something in the future. Once it's actually time to pick, it's not always what it seems. He operates different. He left the war room after day one because they had just the first round, right? They get ready for the second. And he was walking out of his office and he turned around at Mike Silver and said, hey, it's an entertainment business. So
not wrong.
I don't know where this goes. He could be the genius wonder kid, Theo Epstein 2.0.
The Sean McVay of general managers.
Or Lane Kiffin of general managers. Yeah. This did not go well.
Let's try a 74-yard field goal and see how this works out. What? You're doing what? So there's the audio.
How do you not love the beginning of most of that, though? He kind of talking a little too much there.
It throws off a little bit.
The beginning when he's like, football.
Football's transformational.
It's about belief. I'm just like, oh. John Gruden somewhere smiling.
James Gladstone, you're damn right it is. I do want to get to start the final hour. We got two pretty pivotal and entertaining games tonight in competitive series that I'm not quite sure how they're going to go this evening. So I want to go there at the top of the hour. But before we move any further in the show, I do think the question needs to be asked. It's a two-parter. One is, where is the pucker factor stronger right now? And then two, can anybody explain this to me? So your pucker factors are currently the Knicks, who we all thought the series was over. They shouldn't have won game four, but they did. You're going home on your floor, close out the series.
Yeah.
Nope, doesn't happen. Credit to the Pistons. And then Toronto, in the Stanley Cup playoff, we just did for stinking it up, who's now 1-13, I believe, in their last 14 closeout games. They can't win these things. They were up 3-0. They've lost back-to-back games. They're going back to Ottawa now for a game six. If they choke this away, the city might burn down. And then the follow-up caveat to that is, can anybody explain to me why the best clutch player in the NBA this year, who I believe averaged 13 points per game in the fourth quarter, was standing at the scorer's table as the clock was ticking down late and the Knicks lost to the Pistons last night?
Yeah, your NBA clutch player of the year, Jalen Brunson, leaves with an injury. Hart leaves with an injury. They get checked out. They go get ready to check back in at the end of the fourth, and Tibbs doesn't intentionally foul. He
doesn't do anything to get back in the game.
No, he only has one timeout left. And
one timeout, trying
to save it.
That is the most points average in the fourth quarter, by the way, since they started tracking this stuff in 1996, 1997.
Well, and now also what led to the timeout when they finally called it with, I think, 50 seconds left.
Sounds right.
Guess what it was? Was bad defense.
Bad
Guess
defense.
Who plays defense? Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson.
Would've been nice to have him on the floor there.
Campaign was out there, and I'm just nice. Like, of course, this is what leads it to. Because why would you want to get them in?
Yeah, Bridges and Payne just throwing up bricks for like 2 minutes.
McBride and Payne being in at that point of the game instead of Hart and Brunson is just ridiculous.
You've got to commit an offensive foul that's not a flagrant or obvious, because you don't want them to shoot free throws because you're behind.
You don't want to give them free throws,
but you can.
But they tried to foul. McBride, go back and watch. Yeah. He literally grabbed the defender. The ref didn't call it, and then they didn't try again.
They just, all right, they give up there. No need to do it again. If you were a Knicks fan or a Maple Leafs fan, would you be more nervous right now?
Maple Leafs
fan.
Not even close.
I don't think it's close. Because the Knicks have not had the established success of other teams in the league, right?
Nope.
They get most of the attention because they're the New York market.
The Garden.
But they haven't had this quite like the Maple Leafs. What was the stat? 1-14 now.
1-14 now after last night.
The Knicks were just last year had a great year.
They did.
In their estimation.
They did.
Now they're building. They don't want to lose in round one to an upstart young Piston team. But they're not going to go through the season and be like, well, they might fire Tibbs.
Tibbs is definitely, if they lose the series, Tibbs is getting fired.
For sure. And they might make a move.
But it does, that doesn't linger over the franchise the way this will with Toronto. If Toronto loses this and blows, what were they up, 3-0?
They're up 3-0. They're up 3-0. They won the first
in
three
the
games.
First round?
In the first round.
Yeah.
Ottawa's not that good.
Blue line Brandon will tell you, I don't know what you do. I think you just quit.
Yeah.
I think you just
fold up shop and go home.
Toronto doesn't have a team anymore.
There's no point. What are we even doing? Why even come back and try? It is so funny how it's amazing. Like, the Cubs fans and Red Sox fans, I get, went through this forever. How different players can come and go and then feel the same level of pressure. And like,
it just, it's the
weight of the city. Yes. It doesn't matter if you're there for a year, if you're a newcomer, if you're a new face. Like, I'm a rookie. I just won a national championship in college, or maybe I won a Memorial Cup in the WHL. Like, none of it matters. You get to Toronto and you feel the weight of the world on your shoulders, and the entire city needs you to win. And you just get tight and you get uncomfortable. You can feel it, man. Like, watching on television, you can just feel the tightness of watching teams like that, that it's hard to quantify. And I don't know how they eventually break through. Maybe they win, you know, in game six and everything's fine. They go to the Eastern Conference Finals this year. But boy, oh boy, losing back-to-back games after being up 3-0, when you're finally like, hey, getting out of the first round again. Let's go. Up 3-0. This thing's done. Now you got to go win a game six on the road. And if they lose game six on the road.
Oh, game seven.
The nervous energy in that building in a game seven is going to be palpable.
Well, let me ask you this. So, like, one, the real gut check's going to be Ottawa coming out game six, gets the first goal.
They score first.
That's going to be
immediately like, oh, no.
But I would actually counter game seven. Why should there be nervous energy? You're already a perennial choke artist in the eyes of everybody. Why not go in there with just, yeah, this is who we are. So why go in there nervous?
That'd be
You've
a pretty
already
funny
experienced it.
Pregame speech from the coach if he did that. Look, guys, we choke every year. What the hell? Go have some fun.
I was more talking about the fan base.
We've done this 10 times. Who the hell cares if we lose again? You were already a choker. It's not going to change the narrative about you. Go play loose. Have fun.
This is kind of my point. I mean, if they lose, that's certainly something we're talking about. Of what that drop them to? 1-16 closeout games?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be two more losses if they lose the next two games.
So that's pretty awful.
That's pretty bad.
But again, this has already existed. I don't even watch hockey, and I'm telling you, I've heard about this Maple Leaf choking thing now for like four straight years.
Every year, I put a bet on them to win the Stanley Cup, thinking, hey, maybe this is the year they break through. And they had a 3-0 lead, and I thought, hey, not bad.
Way to jinx them.
Good little year for me. No, not the case. Still plenty of time to figure it out, Toronto. You're still in it. Yeah, the Knicks won last night. I just, having Brunson staying at the, he let him in comeback victories in game one, let him in a comeback victory in game three. Let him in a comeback victory in game four.
Yeah.
He's been the best fourth quarter player in the NBA since they began tracking the metric in 1996, averaging over 13 points per game. It's the highest in the NBA, highest postseason average. Like,
I think two things. One, did you see the floor when he got hurt? They've slowed down the the basketball court. It looks like it's coming apart.
Yeah.
It like his foot sinks down and the floor visibly moves. The other thing is when I watch them play, I'm curious to see if the Pistons can win in Detroit to give us a Game 7 in the Garden, because that would be awesome.
Game 7 in the Garden would be great.
When the good and the bad of Brunson, the good is what you just cited. The clutch stuff, the big shot ability, right? He's a good leader, team guy. That's all great. Go look at OG Anunoby's stats when Brunson didn't play for like a three-week stretch, two-week stretch, whatever it was.
Yeah, he was out for a couple weeks, yeah.
Anunoby's numbers were awesome. People don't get the ball as much when Brunson plays. It's kind of the negative of him is he's kind of a ball stopper.
He's a ball dominant
guy. It's a dribble, 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 do my little step back, shifty move. And he's good. He's really stinking good. Their offense is that, though, when he plays. When it's not, ball moves a little bit.
Nope.
Guys like OG Anunoby can get some shots, score some points. Their offense just gets in these ruts, and it just goes stale for a while. It's just very interesting series because Detroit should have came back to New York up 2-2 or tied 2-2.
Tied 2-2 and be up 3-2
and
right now.
Go back to Detroit being up 3-2. It's fascinating to see where that series goes in game six.
I'm glad we got a game six in Detroit. They have not won a home playoff game since 2008, and so they got a chance to end that long streak in game six back on their home floor. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com. Brian Baldinger coming up at 8:30. That will be our daily ticker today, a little bit later than usual, but Baldy is the best, and we're looking forward to talking some NFL with him. We'll get the Statter Story coming up at 8:15. Are we turning out the lights? We'll start the final hour there next on 1080 The Fam.